The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to Monday, the start of a whole new week. A lot of kind of crazy stuff going on here. And, well, let's see. There's all kinds of things going on. And I think probably the biggest news right now, of course, is coming out of the Middle East. And that is that Cynthia McKinney has been released along with the rest of the passengers and crew of the Spirit of Humanity. The boat and the cargo are still being held by Israel. We don't know what's going to happen with that. Israel is saying they're going to deliver the humanitarian aid to Gaza as soon as they're done inspecting it for illegal contraband and weapons and whatever else that can be hidden in a box of crayons here. Now, this drama played out over the holiday weekend, where Cynthia McKinney and many of the other passengers who were kidnapped in international waters were offered an early release and the avoidance of any trial if they would sign a confession that they had knowingly violated Israel's territorial waters. And, of course, none of them would sign it because they were not in Israel's territorial waters at the time of their hijacking. They were in international waters. They had not even gotten to the Gazan waters. They were in international waters when their ship was hijacked and when they were abducted off of the high seas here. Finally, apparently the documents were actually written in Hebrew, and that was kind of the final straw where Cynthia McKinney said, I'm not going to sign this. I can't read it. I don't know what I'm signing here. And that's ridiculous. And then finally, late last night, we got word that Israel, fearing that this was going to turn into another public relations disaster, and yes, it was going to, decided to simply release everybody. Some of them are, the British activists are already back home in Britain. They were greeted at the airport as heroes. The Bahrainians, same situation there. Now, the situation with Cynthia McKinney is a little more fluid. We were originally told that she was taken to Ben Gurion Airport yesterday, put on a plane, and got into New York just before midnight, then caught a connecting flight to Washington, D.C., and arrived there at midnight. Obviously, the goal there to forestall any kind of a heroine's welcome that might be set up to greet here. Now we are hearing from Brian Marwaha from the State Department. Basically, Cynthia McKinney delayed her departure from Israel because she's traveling with an unnamed other person also involved in this situation. Basically, the last report we have is that they were put on a plane on LL Flight 001, which departed Tel Aviv 3 hours and 10 minutes ago, according to my clock, to arrive at John F. Kennedy Airport in New York City at 5 a.m. tomorrow morning Eastern Time. Now, again, I still think Cynthia is planning to take a connecting flight to Washington, D.C. I don't have any other information. As soon as we get it, we're going to put it up there because you know that Israel supporters, the megaphonies, they're going to know exactly when Cynthia is coming in, and they're going to be out there with their signs to say terrible things about her and try and make it look like America doesn't love her and respect her for what she's done. So they're keeping a very tight lid on the travel information. As soon as we find out where and when Cynthia McKinney will be walking out of an airport, we'll get it out there. We'll put it up as a banner at whatreallyhappened.com because it would be very, very essential for Americans to get down there and give Cynthia McKinney the heroine's welcome, to which she is entitled for having gone through what she's gone through. Now, meanwhile, at this point, there is still no TV network news coverage of any of this material. I've been checking with friends. We were out yesterday with some friends over the holiday weekend. I was asking, have you been hearing about Cynthia McKinney? No, hadn't heard a thing about it. Those people who did know that Cynthia McKinney had been abducted had heard it on the internet, on the blogs, on the alternative media. The TV networks, still, when I got ready to do the show, I fired up MSNBC, and by golly, it was another story about Michael Jackson, and this is it. It's all Michael Jackson all the time. And it's just amazing. The TV corporate media has been given their orders. You will not cover Cynthia McKinney and the hijacking of the Spirit of Humanity by Israel. Quite a contrast to 2007, when these British sailors in armed patrol boats with guns wandered across the line into Iranian waters. Britain is still saying it's disputed. It was an old map. They weren't accurate, blah, 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 blah. The Iranians said it's our water. They captured the British sailors in their territorial waters. And it was a big, huge news story every day. What is happening to the British sailors? Are they being tortured? Are they being maltreated? What's going on? We demand that Iran releases them. If they're maltreated, it will be just this huge, huge, huge story. From armed patrol boats inside Iran's territorial waters, Iran finally just released them. Nothing was done to them. They were not harmed in any way. They came back home and said, we were treated very well, whereupon their government told them to shut the heck up. And here we have a peace mission, a humanitarian mission, no weapons, just medicine and cement and crayons for the kids. And Israel hijacks the boat in international water and takes prisoner a former U.S. congresswoman, a member of Congress. And the corporate American TV media cannot be bothered with it at all. You know, their pro-Israel bias is like this flashing neon sign glued to their foreheads. We've stuck it there. We're going to keep it there. We are going to keep it there to remind the world of how the corporate TV news networks in the United States of America absolutely are forbidden to say anything negative about Israel. You're not getting the facts from them. You're getting spin and propaganda all the time, every channel, and that's the situation here. Now, getting back to 4th of July. Yes, I did have a very good, relaxing weekend. I went down, some friends asked me to do some video of the 4th of July parade in Kailua here on the island of Oahu. And it's sort of the biggest parade we have here on the island, and all the dignitaries were there, and Senator Inouye was there. And what struck me as really kind of odd was, now, Governor Linda Lingle knows my wife and I. We have been to the governor's mansion on a couple of occasions, and very cordial. And I'm actually a Republican, even though I don't approve of Republican politicians who do stupid things with our country, like George W. Bush. But I had gone down there as an experiment. I just wanted to get a reaction. I wore one of our What Really Happened t-shirts. I wore the one that said, I survived the Bush economy, and all I have left is this lousy t-shirt. And I was not prepared for the going over. And I say that they were very polite and respectful, but our Governor Linda Lingle had a huge security phalanx around here, six guys at least. And the armored, you know, she arrived in the armored van, you know, with all the Kevlar and everything added. You've seen them on Discovery Channel and everything. And it was a little shocking. Inouye just showed up in his car. And no big deal. And the governor had all the security around her and everything. And I understand with my very deliberately provocative t-shirt why the security, who don't know who I am, you know, wanted to come over and talk to me long enough to realize I wasn't, you know, going to, like, try and brain the governor with an $8,000 video camera. But they decided I was harmless, and that was kind of the end of it. But it did catch me a little off guard until I realized that what this is telling us is that Hawaii is heading into deeper fiscal trouble, and the governor is having to cut more and more people's jobs, and they're going to carry a grudge. So I guess in hindsight, it did make sense. Now, as far as the shirt, I was right by the edge of the parade route with a camera and just taking video, and I got so many laughs and comments, and man, I want that t-shirt. And obviously everybody on the Democratic party's float, they were laughing and cheering and, you know, saying, where do we get those and everything. But what kind of surprised me is about four people on the float for the Republican Party also cracked up when they saw this shirt. So they know it's out there. And it was kind of funny because I was in this ideal spot right next to the judges' stand, and the MC is there talking about all the floats and the groups as they come by. And as the warm-up, waiting for the parade to get there, he's talking about the history of the country and tried to lead everybody in the Pledge of Allegiance, and that really kind of got lukewarm. I wish I'd had the camera running on that. It would have been interesting. Anyway, that brings us into this segment. That's the end of the 4th of July reminiscences. When we get back, we're going to be talking about the tea parties, and then we're going to be talking about the renewed push into Iran. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you. Media, Public Radio.
To the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha. Welcome back to the show here. And before we go much further, Matt is in the control room ready to answer your phone calls. And our number is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Now, over this 4th of July weekend, we had a number of tea parties all across the country. We had about four just here on the island of Oahu. And again, not a lot of coverage from the TV networks. They are being covered on the blogs and various other tax activist organizations. What was really interesting was going into the weekend, we had a statement from the Anti-Defamation League that attempted once again, this is getting to be a common theme with them, to link tax protesters with white supremacists and anti-Semites. The idea being that the only reason people are protesting taxes is because Israel gets so much of it, and therefore that makes it anti-Semitism to protest over taxes. That's their basic idea. Now, normally it would be easy to dismiss Abe Foxman for this kind of illogic because it's so typical of what they come up with, but apparently amendments to the 2010 National Defense Authorization Act, which is already passed by the House, would give the Attorney General the authority to declare gun owners, anti-abortion activists, and tax protesters as domestic terrorists. See, this is that little bit of creeping thing. Originally, they said, well, we got to be able to torture the terrorists. And that was back when we thought terrorists were people who blew buildings up and dropped anthrax all over people and did really nasty, ugly things like that. But now that they've got everybody saying, well, I guess it's okay to go ahead and torture terrorists, now they're redefining terrorism down to where, and this is hardly the first time we've seen this. We saw it with the MIAC report. We saw it with the FEMA lexicon. We've seen it in the brochure that the FBI has put out to police departments that people talking about the Constitution are now terror suspects. They're setting that bar for what constitutes terrorism lower and lower so that more and more Americans now fit in that categorization and can have their civil rights suspended and be subject to who knows what all else the tyrant is planning. It's really just getting crazy out there. Now, moving along to the economy, which normally we do at the top of the show, but obviously we had all this other stuff going on here. The Royal Canadian Mint has finally finished their official audit and discovered that some 17,514 ounces of gold, plus bits of the other precious metals they were saving there, has just disappeared from the vaults. It's just gone away, and they can't find where it went. Now, this is Canada's problem. I don't know. Maybe this gold got dumped on the market to help depress gold prices. They keep seeming to be pushed down further and further, which is sort of counterintuitive because during hard economic times, when the stock market is doing what it's doing, people tend to desert the stock market and go to metals. Unless the metals are going down, then they'll stay in the stock market. So somebody is dumping gold on the market to keep the gold prices down. This might be the source of that gold because there's only so much out there. Now, the reason I mention this is because maybe, along with auditing the Federal Reserve, it's time to audit America's physical gold supply and make sure it's really there as well, because a lot of trading takes place on the basis of that physical gold inventory. You know, the COMEX and the futures and all the rest of that is based on the idea that somewhere, in a vault somewhere, the actual physical gold is there to be redeemed with these promissory notes, these certificates that are being traded on the various brokerages and commodities markets. Because they're not running through the commodities exchange, you know, pushing wheelbarrows full of the actual physical gold. It's all contracts and promissory notes. Where is the actual gold on which all of these notes are being written? Maybe it's time, given that 17,500 ounces has vanished from Canada's equivalent of Fort Knox, maybe it's time for the American people to see a full and complete audit of the gold which is held by the government on behalf of the American people. It's not the government's gold. It's our gold. It belongs to we, the people. And I think it's time we demand an audit to make sure that it's really still there and hasn't been given out, you know, as goodies and gifts to a bunch of other people. Now, I'm going to skip on past a lot of the other economic news with one exception. And I kind of want to get into some of the other things here regarding Iran. About a week ago, we reported a story in which a very strange circumstance seemed to exist where the New York Stock Exchange was no longer reporting Goldman Sachs on the activities of what are called the program traders. What do I mean by a program trader? Back in the 1980s, as computers became inexpensive and brokerages started using them for more than just to display the current stock market numbers, they started writing software that would watch the market and, based on some simple rules, would automatically execute buy and sell orders. The problem was, and this resulted in a serious economic crash, the program trading was happening so fast that it was driving the market into these incredible volatile cycles, up and down and up and down. The programs were trying to watch for the trend and didn't realize the software itself had become the trend and just it went completely out of control. So the program trading was outlawed, along with a lot of other safety measures to put in there to prevent it from happening. And then all of a sudden, a couple of years ago, the New York Stock Exchange announced they would allow certain selected, trusted traders to start using automatic program trades again. The biggest of them is Goldman Sachs. And for some reason, the New York Stock Exchange, a week ago, stopped reporting on how much money they were making. Well, now, apparently, there has been an FBI arrest, and it is starting to pry the lid off of this Pandora's box of program trading that Goldman Sachs has been carrying forward. And apparently, during a time when we are losing our jobs and losing our homes and going into debt and we're in default on our credit cards and we're owing taxes and all the rest of this stuff, all this terrible stuff is happening to the American people, Goldman Sachs is pulling in $100 million a day in profits from these program trades. Now, you need to understand something very fundamental. Goldman Sachs is not providing any kind of a service or benefit to the community in exchange for that $100 million. They're using computers to game the stock market, to catch stock. Stocks are always fluctuating up and down, and they're using their computers to simply buy and sell based on the up and down. They're literally looting this money from the stock market. They're looting it from the other traders who don't have the use of computers. They're looting it from the actual companies whose stock is involved, and they're basically putting the money in their pocket, and they are returning nothing of benefit to the American people. And this is the same company, which I might add, is at the heart of the plunge protection team that has been given permission to mess around with the stock market, supposedly to keep things under control. But we're seeing this wonderful report that came out of Rolling Stone magazine in which Goldman Sachs has engineered every major market manipulation since the Great Depression, and it looks like they're doing it again. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I want to talk now about the situation in Iran. This is getting very, very critical. The consensus of opinion out here in the blogosphere, in the alternative media, is because the attempt at a coup d'etat and regime changed basically by replaying the 1953 overthrow of the democratically elected government of Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh, because that has failed. Now we're back to the, oh, Iran might someday kind of maybe want to build nuclear weapons, therefore we're justified in going in and invading them now. Actually, the U.S. is not going to do the invasion. It is going to be led by Israel. And one of the very alarming comments that came out over the weekend was Vice President Joe Biden saying that Israel is free to set their own course on Iran. And, of course, my question to Vice President Biden is Iran equally free to set its own course on Israel? And my gut is telling me that Joe Biden would say no, but fail to explain why that would be the case. Now, Biden's talking about how, Israel has a sovereign right to choose its own course, and we in the U.S. don't have a right to interfere. Well, what does Biden think the U.S. has been doing in Iraq and Afghanistan and Somalia and now Pakistan and North Korea? We interfere all over the place. We interfere everywhere. So it's rather disingenuous for the vice president to be saying, well, we respect the sovereign right of Israel to do as it pleases. Actually, but the bottom line is, Israel's going to do what it wants anyway. They don't listen to the United States. They know that our government is never going to refuse to sign the checks or send more weapons. The special relationship between Israel and the United States is Israel owns our government. They bought it using AIPAC. Biden is simply stating the obvious. They're trying to make it look like it's the U.S. decision at the policy level to let Israel go ahead and start World War III. Actually, it isn't. Israel's just announced, we're going to do it, and the U.S. is trying to save face, as they always tend to do. Now, apparently the Israeli Air Force is already training for long-duration flights to do the reach from Tel Aviv to Tehran. And so they're gearing up. They're very obviously getting ready to do this, and it's a foregone conclusion. And Israel's going to start a war with Iran. Iran will counterattack through Iraq, which right now is filled with your young friends and relations wearing uniforms. See, Israel is laughing itself silly. It's the perfect situation. They've got permission to overfly Iraq. They're going to go bomb Iran. And then they're going to skedaddle back to home to Israel and let our kids, our American soldiers, deal with Iran's desire for a counterattack or a retaliatory strike. So it's like the little kid who runs out and punches you in the balls and then runs behind his big brother for protection. That's exactly the mentality that is on display here. Now, one of the most worrying things here, and let me preface this by saying, Iran is not Iraq. When the U.S. went in to attack Iraq, they had been starved by decades of sanctions. They were using these old leftover weapons from the Soviet Union. They rusted out tanks. Really not very credible at all. Training budgets had been slashed. Iran is very different. They have a modern, up-to-date military with latest weapons not only from the U.S. but from Russia. Russia has signed a mutual defense pact with them. Anybody who attacks Iran is going up against the very best that Russia is able to supply right now. And we saw how good it is in Georgia just last year. So for Israel to be able to attack Iran, it is not just a question of attacking the power station and the fuel rod manufacturing facilities. Israel is also going to have to attack all of Iran's air bases and try and catch the planes on the ground the way they did during the Six-Day War with Egypt. They're going to have to attack all the military bases that have the kind of equipment that can make the drive from Iran down to Israel. In other words, it's not just going to be the power station. It's not going to be like Iraq, where they went up and bombed the Osirik reactor and went back home knowing that Iraq didn't have the means to really do anything about it, except cry in the aftermath and proclaim it had just been a power station, which inspections in 2003 confirmed it was just a power station. So it's going to be a major attack. And in this vein, we have this story that one of Israel's Dolphin submarines that Germany gave them, and I mean gave them, Germany's still on the hook for all this World War II stuff. So Germany manufactures this submarine for export. It's called the Dolphin. It is perhaps one of the world's most advanced diesel-electric attack submarines. And diesel electric, no, it doesn't have a nuclear reactor, and you have to stop and visit a tender ship every once in a while. But it has the advantage. It's a lot quieter than a nuclear boat. Nuclear submarines, they've got that reactor, and that reactor makes a lot of noise. Diesel electric boats are incredibly, incredibly quiet, so they've got that advantage for short term. Now, it is known, it's been reported, that one of the Israeli Dolphin submarines transited the Suez Canal. They're not saying exactly when. Officially, it was to take part in an Israeli naval exercise. They have that little tiny port down in the Gulf called Elan. And supposedly it doesn't have a submarine tending facility, but it doesn't really need one. And they're saying there was a prolonged military exercise. But that Dolphin submarine is now south of the Suez. It's in the Gulf, could be anywhere around that whole area, heading for the Gulf of Oman and into the Persian Gulf area. Now, it carries torpedo tubes. It carries a couple of special enlarged tubes, which are thought to be for Israel's Popeye turbofan-powered cruise missile. Nuclear-tipped, has a range of just 78 miles. So it might be able to reach some of the coastal facilities, but it doesn't have a lot of range. Now, that's if it's carrying the Israeli Popeye. Those torpedo tubes that the submarine carries are also capable of launching Harpoon missiles, which have a somewhat greater range, and it's known that the U.S. has been providing these Harpoon missiles to Israel. What I'm speculating about, and this goes back 2 years ago to this very strange story about how Israel was picking up some weapons from the U.S. down in Diego Garcia, which struck everybody as kind of a, why go all the way down there? Why not just have the U.S. cargo ship pull up at Haifa and offload the weapons there? Well, obviously, if the weapons, the exact nature of the weapons, were being kept secret, that would be the reason to go to Diego Garcia. So here's the possibility. Those torpedo tubes are able to launch Tomahawk cruise missiles, and those have a 2,500-kilometer range, and they can carry a nuclear warhead. Now, during the 2003 attack on Iraq, the U.S. literally used up all of the, what are called TLAM-Cs, which are the Tomahawk land attack cruise missiles, conventional. But they still got a bunch of the nuclear ones left, and nobody knows where they are right now. And, of course, they're making the new next-generation Tomahawk cruise missile to rebuild the inventory since 2003. So I think if we are looking at that Dolphin submarine being in the Persian Gulf, I don't think anybody should assume that its reach is limited to the range of the Popeye or the Harpoons. I think there's no reason at all to say that that Dolphin is not carrying U.S.-supplied nuclear-tipped Tomahawk cruise missiles, because whatever attack Israel is planning on Iran, it's got to be devastating, or Iran is going to march right on back through to stomp on Iran. And here's the situation that makes it really politically tricky. The Iranians are willing to lose millions of lives in a war. The United States is not. The body count gets high enough, the pressure to get our kids out of Iraq and let Iran and Israel settle their own differences will be great. Israel might then have to resort to their own nukes, and then the whole political situation explodes. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Last segment today, and just we've got so much to talk about. It's a very, very busy news cycle here right now. First of all, getting up to date on Iran. Iran has freed the arrested reporter, And apparently another one of the embassy employees, we misstated before, we said 8 of the 9 had been released. It turned out it was 7 of the 9. Now the 8th one has been released. They're probably going to release the last one. What Iran is doing right now is basically the same thing the NYPD did after all the protesters were arrested ahead of the GOP convention. The convention's over. Let's let them all go home. And that's the end of it. And the same thing with all of this upset, these staged riots, this attempt at a coup d'etat. It's now over, and they're letting everybody go and saying, okay, that's it. Go forth and sin no more. Now, of course, in the midst of all this talk about how we had to destroy Iraq because they supposedly had nuclear weapons, which it turned out they didn't, and why we're being encouraged to support the destruction of Iran because they kind of maybe sort of one day might be thinking about planning to consider preparations for making a nuclear weapon. And, of course, left unsaid in all of that is the fact that Israel does have nuclear weapons. They're always talking about Iraq was building nuclear weapons underneath the Osirik reactor. That, of course, turned out to be a lie. Then now they're trying to claim that Iran is building nuclear weapons underneath their power station. The IAEA says that is not being done. And there's a brand new head of the IAEA because Mohammed al-Baradei was accused of being pro-Arab and anti-Israel and blah, blah, blah. He's out. This new gentleman is in. He's Japanese. I forget his name off the top of my head. He is saying exactly the same thing. He is looking at the data from the inspections as mandated under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and Iran is building a power station. And yet Israel is just dead set. They're going to go in and blow up another nuclear power plant, scatter radiation all over the territory, poisoning that whole part of the world, because they have this fantasy that because Israel is building nuclear weapons underneath the Dimona reactor, that everybody else just simply must be doing it. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a married couple and one of them is catching a little on the side, like Governor Sanford. And the guilty partner, whether it's the husband or the wife, and they're feeling guilty, the first thing they do is they start looking for reasons to accuse the spouse of doing the same thing, because that levels the playing field. It's okay for me to be catching some on the side because, well, by golly, I'm convinced my wife is doing exactly the same thing. Or so goes the logic. I got to see it up close when my parents were going through their divorce. So that's how it works. This is what Israel is doing with Iraq and then Iran. And the problem with this is it doesn't matter how many countries you bomb. There's always going to be another one that Israel is going to be fantasizing and hallucinating is a threat. Because, oh my goodness, they're building a nuclear power plant. They must have ill intent. Israel culturally is a paranoid nation. They're suffering paranoid delusions. It doesn't matter how many countries are broken up into rubble. Israel is not dealing with the real world. They're dealing with their paranoia. And their paranoia, unfortunately, is the justification for their whole policy and their existence. They can't stop being paranoid, or they lose their reason for behaving the way that they do. It's a terrible, terrible situation, especially when Israel is a nation that has nuclear weapons. Which brings us to this final comment about this pending Iran war. If Israel attacks Iran and Iran counterattacks and the U.S. gets dragged in, the Iranians will be willing to throw away millions of their own in a just war against what they will see correctly as an unprovoked attack. The U.S. culturally is very different. We don't like to see our kids die, especially in a war where we're not convinced we're morally in the right. And when those body bags start piling up much higher and much faster, the American people are going to say, wait a minute, this isn't even our war. This is not our war. We didn't create this. We didn't create this at all, and we want our kids home. And at that point, then it will be just Iran and just Israel. And at that point, Israel will probably use their nuclear weapons. And the whole world will know that Israel and the United States have been lying all this time when they said that Israel was helpless and weak and didn't have any nuclear weapons, and they were just trembling in fear at all of those mean old Arab neighbors that look at them cross-eyed. So that's the situation that they're in. All right, we've got about 7 minutes here. I want to talk about global warming because we're heading in for a huge, huge fight in the Senate. The House has passed this cap and credit tax bill that's designed. It's the biggest single tax increase in the United States history. At a time when we're in a recession, if not a depression, and the government is raising taxes on this myth that human-caused global warming is a threat to the planet. Now, on the front page of whatreallyhappened.com, there's a video called The Great Global Warming Swindle. It runs about an hour and 15 minutes. You must watch this video. It basically validates and expands on every point that I've been making in this debate over the last year, that climate change is what happens normally, that Al Gore's claim that global temperature and carbon dioxide go up and down together is only partly accurate, because the increase in carbon dioxide follows the increase in global temperature by up to 800 years. So obviously it is temperature gets warmer first, then carbon dioxide goes up. Why? Because the warmer the Earth is, the more life there is. And the more life produces carbon dioxide. Also, carbon dioxide is a very unique chemical in that its ability to be dissolved. Actually, it's really more a property of water than it is of carbon dioxide. It's just like water, when it freezes into a solid, it actually gets larger, which is very unique. Water can hold more gas in it in suspension the colder it gets. That's why when your beer gets warmer or your soda pop gets warmer, the carbon dioxide dissolved in it starts to fizz out. So there's a lot of carbon dioxide dissolved in the world's oceans. As they get warmer, the carbon dioxide escapes to the atmosphere, and the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere goes up. What this program demonstrates is the driving force of the climate here on the Earth, and you knew this was coming, is the sun. So you need to look at this video, you need to study it, you need to send it to everybody who's out there screaming global warming, you know, because the human contribution to the total carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, it's minuscule. If you took all the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and said, okay, a football field, the length of a football field represents all the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The part that humans contribute is about 4 inches long on that football field. The rest is from animals and natural processes, decaying of forest vegetation, the ocean, all of that stuff. The human component contributed to that is microscopic. It's 4 inches on a football field. So you need to watch this video. And more to the point, and this is your homework, and it will count 15% toward your final grade. You need to take the link to this video and you need to mail it to every U.S. senator that you can. And the message we're sending is, yes, we know they're all bought and paid for by Al Gore and his promise of riches from the cap and credit trading system and the push for a global government to save the planet from us icky-poo humans. But we need to let the Senate know that we know it's all a gigantic hoax. And we need to let the Senate know that we know it's all a gigantic hoax. So that if they pass this huge tax increase on all of us, and we start storming Capitol Hill with pitchforks and flaming torches, they'll understand why we're angry. So, find that. The Great Global Warming Swindle. It is a wonderful, wonderful documentary that really lays out exactly where the global warming cultists have conned you. And it's right in there, the amount of money that's put out there. There was this one scientist who was saying, and it's really funny, he says, if I'm studying squirrels and I'm trying to get a research grant, all I have to do is put out my proposal, I'm studying ground squirrels and the collecting of nuts as it's impacted by global warming, and the money will flow. That's how blatant it was. That's the end of our show. We're going to head off here till tomorrow night, same time, 5 p.m. here on the Genesis Communication Networks. Until then, stay safe, be well, be angry, be skeptical. Send that video to your senators, and aloha, America.